This is Audible.
Listening Library presents Wink Poppy Midnight by April Genevieve Tucholsky. Read for you by Michael Crouch, Caitlin Davies, and Allison Packard. You are the hero of your own story. Joseph Campbell. Midnight. The first time I slept with Poppy, I cried. We were both 16, and I'd been in love with her since I was a kid. Since I was still reading monster comics and spending too much time practicing sleight-of-hand tricks because I wanted to be a magician. People say you can't feel real love that young, but I did. For Poppy. She was the girl next door who fell off her bike and laughed at her bloody knees. She was the neighborhood hero who organized games of Burn the Witch and got everyone to play. She was the high school queen who reached forward one day during math class, grabbed Holly Trueblood's thick, white blonde hair in her fist, and cut it off at the skull while Holly screamed and screamed. All because someone said Holly's hair was prettier than her own. She was Poppy. After we slept together, I started crying. Just a little bit. Just because my heart was so full. Just a couple of small little tears. Poppy shoved me off, stood up, and laughed. It wasn't a nice laugh. It wasn't a, "We both lost it together. How wicked of us. How fantastic. I will always love you because we did this one big thing for the first time together" kind of laugh. No, it was more of a, "Is that all it is? And you're crying over it?" kind of laugh. Poppy slipped her long white limbs into her pale yellow dress, like milk sliding into melted butter. She was bonier back then, and didn't need to wear a bra. She stood in front of the lamp, facing me, and the ray of light shone right through her thin summer clothes, outlining her sweet girl parts in a way I would think of over and over again afterward, until it drove me insane. "Midnight? You're going to be the best-looking guy in school by senior year." Poppy leaned her elbows on the windowsill and stared out at the dark. Our high mountain air was thin but clean, and it smelled even better at night. Pine and juniper and earth. The night smells mingled with the smell of jasmine. Poppy dabbed it from a tiny glass bottle in her pocket. Each earlobe, each wrist. "That's why I let you have me first. I wanted to give it to him. He's the only boy I'll ever love. But you don't know anything about him, and I'm not going to tell you anything about him." My heart stopped. Started back up again. "Poppy." My voice was weak and whispery, and I hated it. She tapped her fingers on the sill and ignored me. An owl hooted outside. Poppy swept her blonde hair back behind her shoulder in that gangly, awkward way she still had then. It was completely gone by the time school started up. She was nothing but smooth elegance and cold, precise movements. "And now no one will be able to say I didn't have taste, Midnight Hunt. Even when I was young. You're going to be so beautiful at 18 that girls will melt just looking at you. Your long black lashes, your glossy brown hair, your blue, blue eyes. But I had you first, and you had me first. And it was a good move on my part. A brilliant move." And then came the year of me following Poppy around, my heart full of poetry and bursting with love, and never seeing how little she really cared, no matter how many times I had her in my arms and how many times she laughed at me afterward, no matter how many times she made fun of me in front of her friends, no matter how many times I told her I loved her and she never said it back. Not once. Not even close.
Wink. Every story needs a hero. Mim read it in my tea leaves the day Midnight moved in next door. She leaned over, pushed my hair out of the way, put her fingers on my chin and said, "Your story is about to begin. And that boy moving boxes into the slanted old house across the road is the start of it. And I knew Mim was right about midnight, because the leaves also told her that the big rooster was going to die a bloody death in the night. And sure enough, a fox got him. We found him in the morning, his soft feathers stiff with blood, his body broken on the ground, right next to our red wheelbarrow, like in that one poem.
Poppy. I fell in love with Leaf Bell the day he beat the shit out of D.D. Ruffler. She was the biggest bully in school, and he was the first and only kid to take her down. I'm a bully, too, so you might have thought I'd sympathize with her. But I didn't. Dee was a short, wrong-side-of-the-tracks nobody, with a mile-high, cruel streak. She had a strong, stupid body, and a plain, round face, and a mean, grating voice. And she'd tried to fight Leaf before. She'd called him all kinds of things. Poor, ginger-haired, skinny, dirty, diseased. And he just laughed. But the day she called little seventh-grader Fleet Park a slant-eyed, boy-loving chink, Fleet started crying, and Leaf snapped. He beat Dee Dee into a coma, right there on the school's cement steps. He pounded her head on the concrete, knees pinning her down by the chest, her boobs jiggling, his red hair flying around his lanky shoulders, the snow-capped mountains in the background. My heart swelled three sizes that day. Dee Dee was never the same after Leaf smashed her head in. I'd read about lobotomies in my modern woman's science class, and that's how she was now. Detached. Lethargic. Useless. Leaf didn't get into trouble for that fight. He never got in trouble, just like me. Besides, everyone was sick of Dee Dee, even the teachers. Especially the teachers. She was as mean to them as she was to everyone else. There was an evil in me, too, a cruel streak. I don't know where it came from, and I didn't really want it, no more than I'd want big feet or mousy brown hair or a piggish nose. But fuck it. If I'd been born with a piggish nose, then I would own it, like I own the cruel and the mean. Leaf was the first to recognize me for what I was. I was gorgeous, even as a kid. I looked like an angel, cherub lips and blushing cheeks and elegant bones and blonde halo hair. Everyone loved me, and I loved myself, and I got my way and did what I wanted, and I still left people feeling like they were lucky to know me. No one thinks they're shallow. Ask every last person you know. They'll deny it, but I'm living proof. I get away with murder, because I'm pretty. But Leaf saw right through the pretty. Saw straight through it. I was 14 when Leaf Bell lobotomized Dee Dee on the school steps. And I was 15 when I followed Leaf home and tried to kiss him in the hayloft. He laughed in my face and told me I was ugly on the inside and left me sitting alone in the hay.
Wink. Every story needs a villain. The villain is just as important as the hero. More important, maybe. I've read a lot of books, some out loud to the orphans and some just to myself. And all the books had a villain. The White Witch, the Wicked Witch, the Gentleman with the Thistledown Hair, Bill Sykes, Sauron, Mr. Hyde, Mrs. Danvers, Iago, Grendel. I didn't need Mim's tea reading to learn the villain of my story. The villain had blonde hair and the hero's heart on her sleeve. She had teeth and claws and a silver tongue, like the smooth-talking devil in Ashen Grimm.
Midnight. I had an older brother, a half-brother. His name was Alabama, to be explained later. And he lived with our mom in Lourmarin, France. My parents weren't divorced. They just didn't live together. My mom wrote historical mysteries, And 2 years ago, in the middle of a blizzard, she decided she would keep writing historical mysteries, but in France instead of here. My dad sighed and shrugged, and off she went. And Alabama went with her. He'd always been her favorite anyway, probably because his father was my mother's true love. Alabama's dad was Muscogee and Choctaw. He ran back to Alabama, the state, not the brother, before my brother was even born. Then my dad came along, with his big heart and weakness for creatures in need. He married my pregnant mother, and the rest was history. Until she gypsied herself and my brother off to a land of grapes and cheese last winter, that is. So my dad sold the dull, spacious, three-bedroom, three-bathroom house I grew up in, and moved us into a five-bedroom, one-bath, crumbling, creaking old house in the country. 5 acres, apple orchard, sparkling, bubbling creek. Just in time for summer. And I didn't mind. Not a bit. The house was 2 miles from town. 2 miles from Broken Bridge, with its Victorian houses and cobblestone streets, and expensive gourmet restaurants and hordes of skiing snow bunny tourists in the winter. And it was 2 blessed, beautiful miles away from Poppy. No more soft taps on my window in the middle of the night from the girl 3 doors down. No more Poppy laughing as she crawled over my windowsill and into my bed. No more me not knowing whose cologne I smelled all over the front of her shirt. I was done being a sucker. And this old house, nestled between apple trees and pine trees, in a shadowy, forgotten corner of the mountains, it was the first step to my freedom. My freedom from Poppy.
Poppy. I would have given it to Leaf the second he asked for it. Except he never, ever, ever did. So I gave it to Midnight instead. Midnight and his big, droopy eyes, his heart hanging out of his chest, the sighs, the softness, the kisses. I hated him for it. Really, really hated him for it. Hated, hated. Hated, 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 hated. My parents still thought I was a virgin. They never discussed sex in front of me. They refused to acknowledge that I'd grown up because they wanted me to be their stupid little angel baby forever. And it made me rage, rage, rage inside. All the time. All the time. I wore the shortest skirts I could find, and the lowest cut tops. Oh, how they squirmed, their eyes scrambling to focus on some part of me that wasn't sexual, so they could keep on thinking of me as they always had. My parents still gave me dolls as presents. Ones that looked like me, blonde with big eyes and puffy red lips. And whenever I saw another box sitting on the kitchen table, wrapped in pink paper with my name on it, I knew I would find myself over at Midnight's window later that night, tap, tap, tapping, wanting to be let in, so I could prove to myself how unangelic I was. Most men lead lives of quiet desperation. Leaf said that a lot. It was some quote from a tree-hugging hippie who lived a boring life in the woods 1 million years ago. And Leaf probably thought it would open my eyes and make me wise up and get in touch with my inner deeps. But all it did was make me want to tear off all my clothes and run through the town screaming. If I was going to lead a life of desperation, then it would be loud, not quiet.
Wink. I watched the hero as he moved boxes into the old Lucy Risch house. I stood by an apple tree, and I was there a long time before he saw me. I was good at not being seen when I didn't want to be. I'd learned how to be quiet and invisible from reading Sneaks and Shadows. I hadn't shown Sneaks and Shadows to my brothers and sisters. I didn't want them learning how to hide in broad daylight. Not yet. I hoped the hero would like it in his new house. Lucy hadn't liked it. She'd been a mean, superstitious old woman who called us witches and clutched her rosary whenever she saw us. And she threw apples at the orphans if they played too close to her lawn. Her husband had been nice, He was always smiling at us from across the road, but he died 3 years ago. Felix thinks Lucy poisoned him, but I don't know. Old people die all the time without the help of poison.
Midnight. I looked up, and there she was suddenly, standing at the bottom of the front steps, wearing a little green button-down shirt and a pair of baggy brown overalls with huge strawberry buttons on the straps. It was an outfit a kid would wear, not a 17-year-old girl. The overalls were dirty and too big for her little body. Wink was one of the infamous Bell kids. They never seemed to end, and who knew how many there really were in the first place. But now I lived next to them, and so maybe I would be able to find out. Maybe that would be my second goal of the summer. Like this. 1. Get over Poppy. For good. 2. Count the Bell kids. In elementary school, Wink Bell had been called Feral Bell behind her back because her hair was messy and her clothes were always kind of dirty. Feral was a big word for little kids, which, looking back, makes me think some bitter teacher gave her the nickname first. People still called her Feral sometimes, and she didn't seem to notice really, let alone mind. All the Bell kids had weird names, just like me in Alabama, and I'd always felt drawn to them for that, if nothing else. I shifted the box of books I was carrying to my other arm and stared at Wink. Her red hair curled into long, tight spirals that draped over her thin shoulders, and she had freckles on her nose and cheeks and just about everywhere else. Her eyes were big and green and innocent. No one's eyes look like that anymore. No one my age, at least. Our eyes grew up and stopped believing in magic and started caring about sex. But Feral's, they still had a faraway, puzzled, lost in an enchanted forest gleam to them. "You look like someone," Wink said. I put the box of books down on the porch, and Wink must have taken that as an invitation, because she walked right up the steps and stood in front of me. Her head barely reached my shoulder. "You look like someone," she repeated. People in school thought Wink was strange. Beyond strange. If a person was just a little weird, that person could be made fun of. Maybe they knew too many Star Wars quotes, or maybe they talked to themselves, or lived in a one-room mountain shack, or smelled like basement, or did magic tricks in school every chance they got because they wanted to be magicians. These people could be teased, laughed at, made to cry, but not Wink. The bullies had given up on Wink and her siblings years ago. The Bells were impossible to ridicule. They were never, ever embarrassed or scared. Eventually, the bullies got bored and moved on to easier prey. Wink had an older brother named Leaf. He graduated last year, but when he'd been in school, everyone had been afraid of him. Leaf had calm green eyes and dark red hair, as straight as Wink's was curly. He was tall and lean, and you'd never think he'd be able to beat the hell out of anyone. But he did. All the time. He had a temper on him that no one, not even the teachers, took for granted. Everyone said the Bell kids were witches and weirdos. And people left them alone. And they seemed to like it that way, for the most part. So why was Wink standing on my porch right now and staring at me and looking like she wasn't going anywhere? Wink reached into a pocket of her overalls. It was so deep, her whole arm disappeared inside. When she pulled her hand back out, it held a small book. She flipped through it, found what she was looking for, and handed it to me. It was old, and the pages were half falling out. Wink held it open at an illustration of a boy with a sword at his side. The boy was on a hill, facing a dark stone castle, grim-looking mountains in the background. He looked like he was waiting for something to come out and kill him. "That's Thief," Wink said, pointing one of her short, freckled fingers at the boy. "He fights and kills the thing in the deep with the sword his father left him." She tapped her fingertip on the page. "See his brown curly hair and his sad blue eyes? You look like him." I glanced at the illustration again, and then back at Wink. Thanks, I said, though I wasn't sure it was a compliment. She nodded, kind of gravely, and put the book back in her deep pocket.
Have you read The Thing in the Deep?
I shook my head.
I've read it to the orphans many times. The orphans is what I call all my sisters and brothers, because there are so many of them, and because we don't have a father anymore. We do have a mother, so they're not real orphans, but she's always busy reading people's leaves and cards, and we're left to ourselves mostly.
Wink paused.
That's why you'll see a lot of strange cars in our driveway. A strange car means someone is here, and she's reading their cards.
Wink paused. Again. She was in no hurry.
Mim read my leaves, and she said you and I were going to have a story together. I was wondering if our story was going to be like The Thing in the Deep, because you look like Thief.
Wink took a big breath, let it out, put her hands in her pockets, and stopped talking. A breeze floated by and lifted her thick hair off her shoulders. After her long speech, she now seemed content to just let us stand in silence. I didn't quite know how to talk to Wink yet. That would come later. But I already found her sort of relaxing. The seconds ticked by, and I listened to the trickling of the creek down by the apple orchard, and the rustling sounds of my dad unpacking inside. I felt my shoulders ease downward and my posture soften. Being with Wink was somehow like being alone, except not, you know, lonely. And eventually I realized that the reason I felt so peaceful was because Wink wasn't taking stock. She wasn't trying to figure out if I was sexy or cool or funny or popular. She just stood in front of me and let me keep on being whoever I really was. And no one had ever done that for me before, except maybe my parents in Alabama. "So what happens in the book?" I asked, after a few minutes of breezes and curly hair and overalls and not judging and soft, peaceful quiet. "What happens to Thief?"
"There's a monster in the shape of a beautiful woman. She kills people. Children, old people, everyone. She tries to kill the girl that Thief loves. He fights the monster, and he kills her, because he's the hero. There is a great victory, and a descent into darkness. There are clues and riddles to solve, and trials of strength and wit. There's redemption and consequences, and ever after."
I've read a lot of books, too. More than I'd let anyone know, except my dad. I read a lot in the last year, especially. My days had been shuffling from class to class, driving all my damn friends away with my mood swings and my nonstop poppy this and poppy that spewing, and my love, 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 always my love for this blonde-haired girl who sometimes held my hand between classes and sometimes kissed me on the lips when people weren't looking, but mostly ignored me, leaving me following behind, calling her name and her refusing to turn around. But my nights, the ones where Poppy didn't knock on my window, were spent with my books. I read a lot of science fiction, and way more high dragon fantasy than is probably good for a person. I read the classics, like Dickens and Animal Farm and Where the Red Fern Grows. I even read some historical romance and some murder mysteries and horse and gun westerns. I didn't care. I read it all. Alabama was basketball and cross country and leaning on things and jumping off things and all the girls liking him. But I was the reader brother who liked to swim in rivers and hike in the rain and sit under the stars but never, ever play organized sports. And I supposed I was all right with this. Wink and I kept staring at each other. She was running this conversation, and I let her call the shots. She turned and looked down at the books and the box I'd been carrying, so I got a chance to notice the soft-looking batch of freckles on her inner arms, and how small her nose was, like it belonged on a doll, and her short, stubby, faded red eyelashes and her pointed chin. My dad walked by us at one point. Tall, thick brown hair, wire-rimmed glasses, easy, soft stride. He liked to run when he wasn't reading or selling rare books to people in faraway places, and his running meant he moved like a cat. He reached in and got a lamp from the moving van strode quietly back, smiled, and carried the lamp inside, letting us get on with our silence.
Midnight!
A girl's voice shredded the breezy stillness. I jerked my head toward the sound. Poppy. She was standing at the edge of the woods, on the other side of the lane, at the edge of the Bell's rambling farm. I guess 2 miles wasn't far enough after all. Damn. Poppy passed by the red barn, the 4 Bell outbuildings, and their old farmhouse with its red slouchy roof and tall windows with black shutters. She crossed the road that was really just gravel and weeds, wove between our 4 bright green apple trees, walked up the wooden porch steps, and stood in front of Wink as if she weren't there. She was wearing a white loose dress that still managed to hug her body in a way that whispered, "I paid too much for this." Poppy was the spoiled only child of 2 busy doctors who raked in money from the snowboarding celebrities with a death wish that bombarded Broken Bridge every winter. Her house was one of the biggest around, including the endless second homes owned by film stars and aging musicians. She ran her hand through her hair and smiled at me.
"Do you know how long it took me to walk here? I can't believe I bothered."
I didn't look at her. I watched Wink walk down the steps, turn, and go back to her farm across the road without another word, quiet as a nap in the sun.
"My parents won't get me another car until I graduate."
Poppy squeezed her perfect lips into a pout, oblivious to Wink's departure, as if she were a ghost.
"Just because I took the new Lexus without asking and then totaled it by the bridge. Fuck, they should have expected that."
I ignored her. I stared off at the Bell farmyard, distracted by a bit of green and brown and red that was climbing a ladder attached to the big barn that stood off to the right of the white, ramshackle farmhouse. Wink disappeared into the dark square of the hayloft opening. I'd known Wink all my life, but really, for all practical purposes, I'd only just met her. Poppy snapped her fingers in my face, and my eyes clicked back on her. She looked annoyed and beautiful, as usual, but I wasn't really noticing for once. I was wondering what Wink was going to do up in that hayloft. I wondered if she was going to reread The Thing in the Deep to the orphans. I wondered what it was going to be like living next to a girl like that instead of a girl like Poppy. I suddenly wished, with my whole damn heart, that I'd always lived in this old house, across the road from Wink and the orphans.
"Midnight. Midnight. Midnight."
Poppy was saying my name over and over in the drippy, sweet voice that had once set me on fire, and now just made me feel cold. I yanked myself out of the peaceful, surreal feeling that Wink had cast, and finally focused on the girl in front of me. "Go home, Poppy." Poppy blinked her tart gray eyes. Slowly, she played with the expensive pockets on her expensive dress and smiled at me. Her gentle, sad smile that with very little effort she could make seem sincere.
"We're not over, Midnight. We're not over until I say we're over."
I couldn't even look at her. The peaceful Wink feeling was gone now. Entirely gone. All I felt was anger. And melancholy. Poppy reached up and put her hand on my cheek. Her eyes hooked into my skin and pulled my face down toward hers. Like a fish on a line. I fought her. But not nearly as hard as I wanted to. Poppy was used to getting what she wanted. That was the thing about Poppy. She won. She always won.
Poppy. Leaf didn't talk in school. He didn't stand around and yak about boy things with other stupid boys. None of the Bell kids talked, really, which is one of the things that made them so weird. Leaf was eerie and still and quiet, and he always looked bemused or angry. And when he didn't look bemused or angry, he looked blank and distant and removed, like he wasn't seeing anything or anyone else around him at all. Bridget Rise was a pants peer. Her older brother had been a pants peer, too. I guess it ran in the family, a genetic pants-peeing gene, like having bad eyesight or dry skin or thin hair, something that evolution should have bred out, Darwin style. The last time Bridget peed her pants was at recess in third grade. Some of the kids called her gross and started throwing dirt at her, little tight handfuls of it that got in her hair and down her shirt. I might have thrown some of the dirt. I might have given the other kids the idea. Bridget was crying, sobbing, sobbing, and then out of nowhere, Leaf was there. He was 11 or 12, but he had the temper, even then. He picked Bridget up, soaked jeans and dirt and everything, and carried her into school. And then he came back outside and kicked the shit out of every last one of us. Everyone with dirt on their hands, literally. Me included. He shoved my face into the ground, right into the mud I'd been throwing, and told me that if I teased Bridget again, he'd break my nose. He meant it. We all knew he meant it. And when I forgot anyway and called Bridget the Tinkler 2 weeks later at lunchtime, Lee found me after school, one hand, one punch. That's all it took. My eyes crossing as his fist hit my face. Crack. Snap. Blood. Scream. My nose was still crooked from it. Even my doctor parents couldn't fix it. Not perfectly. Midnight said it made me even more beautiful. The tiny imperfection. But he read poetry and his mind was soft, like his heart. I stopped listening to him years ago. I didn't let Leaf's laughter deter me that day in the hayloft. I was confused because I'd never lost at anything before. But I was high on the challenge, and I wanted to try at something for once. Really try. That's how I felt at first. The day I turned 16, I walked up to Leaf between classes. I leaned my body against his gray locker, back arched. I was wearing the shortest skirt I owned, the one that made my legs look 10 feet long, the one that made Briggs start drooling at Zoe's party the other night. He actually drooled and had to wipe his mouth with his hand. I'd left my bra sitting on my bed, and I knew my nipples were showing through my black slub tee. "Hi, Leaf," I said, using a low, breathy voice that brought boys to their knees. And he looked at me, not with lust, or craving, or greed. He looked at me in the same way I looked at the band nerds in their marching uniforms as they bumbled down the hall carrying their stupid, shiny instruments. The same way I looked at the spineless boys in my class with their panting eagerness and pathetic overconfidence and wispy arms and spindly legs.
"Move."
That's all Leaf said. He stood there, tall and skinny and red-haired and barely caring, and all he said was, "Move." I never cried, not even as a baby. My parents said it was because I was such a sweet little angel, but my parents are fools. I never cried because there are only two reasons people cry. One is empathy, and the other is self-pity. And I never had any of either. I cried over that move, though. I cried, cried, cried.
Wink. Revenge. Justice. Love. They are the three stories that all other stories are made up of. It's the trifecta. It's like if you're making soup for a bunch of orphans. You have to start with onions and celery and carrots. You cut them up and toss them in and cook them down. Everything that comes after this is just other. Stories are that way too. I told the hero about the orphans and the thing in the deep. I liked his eyes.
Midnight. Poppy followed me through my new house, across the creaking hardwood floor, around jumbled-up furniture, under spiderwebs, over boxes, up the stairs, hands sliding over the smooth dark wood of the banister, down the narrow dark hallway to the high-ceilinged bedroom that I'd taken as my own, last door on the left. There weren't sheets on the bed, but the frame and mattress were up. I stepped over two boxes and then moved around the room and opened all the windows. All four had faded yellow curtains that smelled like dust. I went back to the door and closed it. Dad wouldn't bother me if my door was closed. He respected privacy. Privacy was like gold to him, as in worth its weight. He wanted it, and so he gave it to others freely and without question. I had to push the door shut the last few inches so it would latch. This house seemed to be leaning on its side, like an old woman with one hand on her hip, and it made everything off-kilter. Later on, I would come to like it. Later on, I would hear the creaks and moans and feel welcome and comforted, like the house was speaking to me in its own gasping, rickety voice. I would be able to tell where Dad was, down to which corner of the room, just by the series of pops and shudders and squeaks that echoed down to me like the refrain of a song I knew by heart. But back then, it was just an old house, 2 miles away from Poppy, across the road from the Bell Farm. I turned around. Poppy stood in the dusty sunshine of my bedroom, wearing nothing but a thin white summer dress and the skin she was born in. How could something so soft and supple and flawless as Poppy's skin hide a heart as black as hers? How could it show none of what was underneath, not one trace? I'd read the picture of Dorian Gray. I wondered if Poppy had a painting of herself locked in an attic, a painting that was growing old and evil and ugly and rotten, while she stayed young and beautiful and rosy-cheeked. I sat on the bare mattress with a sigh. Poppy crawled into my lap. She kissed my neck. Her hands were on my shoulders, chest, stomach. Down, down, down. "No," I whispered, and then louder. "No." I picked up Poppy by her hips and moved her onto the bed beside me. Her dress was pushed up to her thighs, and she crossed her naked legs, looked up, and smiled.
"So never again? Is that it? You're done with me now? You move out to this rat hole farmhouse, and suddenly it's over?"
I met her eyes. "Yes." She laughed. She laughed, and it was hard and slick and cold, like chewing on ice. She got up from the bed and went to one of the two big windows on the east wall that faced the road, and the Bell Farm.
"You're going to be living next to her now."
Poppy glanced at me over her shoulder, her eyes mean and sly.
"Farrell Bell. That should prove interesting for you."
"Don't call her that." I got up off the bed and joined her at the window. I looked past the three lilac bushes, past the old well, past the rope swing on the ancient oak tree, past the pine trees, past the fields of corn on the left that were rented out to a neighboring farm, past the apple orchard, across the road. Our houses were close, even with the gravel lane between them. I could see everything. I saw chickens running around, following a rooster, and two goats in a white pen, and three kids playing with a dog, and another climbing the ladder of the red barn. I could hear shouts and laughter, and crowing and clucking and barking. I could even smell gingerbread in the oven. The dark, sweet, spicy smell drifted right over the road, straight to my nose. It seemed so much nicer over there, in Wink's world. Much, much nicer than being in this empty, foreign bedroom with a red-blooded Poppy.
"Don't call her what? Farrell? It's better than Wink. Wink is like something from a children's book. And then Wink and her pink horse, Caramel, rode off to fairyland on a path made of clouds."
Poppy was watching the farm, closely, almost as if she'd forgotten I was there.
"Look at all those kids running around. Why should Wink get so many siblings while I have none? Leif said once that I would have been a better person if only I'd had a sibling or two. He said I'd be less selfish by half, as if I..."
"Leif?" I said. "Leif Bell? You used to know him? People at school said he's down in the Amazon searching for a cure for cancer. They said he sleeps on the ground and eats nothing but nuts and berries, and he speaks their Mura language like a local."
"Shut up."
Her eyes were back on mine.
"Just shut up, Midnight.
She went to the door, opened it, left, came back. She sidled up to me and put two fingertips on my heart, pressed.
You and the bell girl, you looked good together.
I said nothing, waiting for the punchline.
I mean it, Midnight. You should get to know her better.
She moved her fingers to my cheek and ran them down over my jawbone, across my neck.
Wink is weird and quiet, and so are you. You two should be friends.
I flinched. What are you up to, Poppy?
Nothing. I'm just trying to be a better person.
I'm bored with being mean. Bored, bored, bored.
So I'm attempting to improve myself.
I'm setting you up with the weird girl across the road. I want you to be happy. No, you don't. You don't even know what the word means. But she just shrugged and laughed and left.
Poppy. I snuck over to the Bell Farm once a few years ago and just watched the goings-on from the shadow of the woods. I was there for a while, and they never even looked in my direction. Not any of them. Like I was invisible. Like I was a ghost. I had this idea that I'd catch Leaf off guard, and maybe a look would pass over his face. Fleeting, but there. Really there. And then I would know. I would know that he thought of me. He and Wink were outside with their siblings. They had a picnic and then played some game with a lot of hooting and hollering. And he was different with them. So different. Especially the pretty brunette sister. He was rowdy and loud, and he laughed all the time. I'd never even heard his laugh. Not his real laugh, anyway. And after a while, I started feeling bad about myself. Standing alone in the woods while they all laughed and played together. And I'm Poppy. I never feel bad about myself, ever. So I went home, and never did it again. The eighth time I followed Leaf to the hayloft, I kissed him with my whole soul, all of me, all the bad parts and the good parts, too. I kissed and kissed him, his thin, straight nose, his freckled cheeks, his wide, bony shoulders, his hard, white torso. But his green eyes never even met mine. Not once. So I got naked. I thought I would stun him with my stunning beauty. But he only shrugged his shoulders and said I could be the spitting image of Helen of Troy for all he cared. I was still not worth the breath I breathed. His younger sister called out from somewhere in the yard, and he went down to her without another word. I cried while I put my clothes back on, fast, fast. The hay caught up in the creases and scratching me all the way home. But it felt good, like the nuns in their hair shirts, a punishment on the path to redemption.
Wink. When the hero knocked on her old screen door at sunset, I thought he was coming to get his fortune told, like everyone else who came to our house. He came bearing one pink little wildflower in his hand, and he gave it to me when I opened the door. I didn't know what to do with it, so I just held it in my fist while he stood there looking pleasant and awkward, like the ordinary farm boy before destiny knocks, and he's forced to pick up the sword and take to the road. I let him inside, and then, before I could change my mind, I asked him if he wanted to go for a walk in the forest. He looked out the windows at the setting sun, and then said yes anyway. I planned to take him down the path that went right by the Roman Luck House. The Roman Luck House was full of bad things and sadness and unforgivables. But I wanted to see what would happen. Midnight waited in our kitchen while I got ready. The orphans surrounded him, asking him questions he didn't know how to answer. Mostly about whether he'd seen the ghost of Lucy Rish yet in his house across the road, and if she threw apples at him, or if they fell right through her old ghostly hands. He smiled and didn't seem to mind all their asking. I put on a green cotton dress, because the tree spirits like green, It had been Mim's dress when she was a girl and had a white belt. There was only one little hole in the back where you could hardly see it. I forgot to brush my hair before we left, but I did remember to dust my arms and neck with powdered sugar. It made the mosquitoes come at you, but the night was blustery and I wasn't worried. Besides, the unforgivables will feed on you unless you give them something sweet. It distracts them, and they leave you alone. Mostly.
Midnight. The inside of Wink's house was just as cluttered and chaotic as you'd expect a house to be with so many dogs and kids running wild. The kitchen was long and rectangular. I saw baskets of brown eggs on the wooden counter, and bowls of apples, and bags of potatoes and onions. There were pots hanging from hooks on the ceiling, and a pile of folded laundry on the end of the table, and everything looked neat and tidy, in its own messy way. The walls were a bright turquoise blue, and there was a working wood stove in the corner. Everything smelled like gingerbread, and Wink's mother offered me a square piece as I waited. She was a short woman with big curves and wary green eyes and long red hair, no gray. She wore her hair in thick braids that crisscrossed her head in a style that looked both ancient and also sort of artsy and modern. She had on a black, blousy shirt thing and a long skirt, lots of colors, and black boots with complicated laces. She looked like what you'd expect a fortune teller to look like, but she also just looked like a mom. A mom who liked to dress interesting and cool instead of wearing beige pants and pastel-colored cardigans. My own mother was a cool dresser. She was a writer and wanted people to know it. She had big round tortoiseshell glasses and thick brown hair and swooping, draping clothes that she wore with plain brown cowboy boots. People used to stare at her when she went grocery shopping, and she liked it that way. So Wink's mother made me feel right at home. The cake was dark. Almost black. It tasted like ginger and molasses. I ate it at the counter. Sticky little hands kept reaching up to the cake pan as I stood there, and it disappeared, piece by piece. The orphans asked me questions as they took the gingerbread, fast, one after another, not waiting for my answers, like the questions were the only thing that mattered. What's your name? Do you believe in ghosts? Have you seen the ghost that lives in your house? How fast can you run? Have you ever played Follow the Screams? Do you have any dogs? Do you like sailboats? I tried to count the kids. I did. But they all kept moving around. And they all had red hair and green eyes. Except for one dark-haired, brown-eyed girl, who smiled at me sweetly as she took her second piece of gingerbread. I decided there were five of them, give or take. They ran circles around Wink's mother as she started making soup on the stove, and eventually ran out of the house, screen door slamming, followed by three smiling dogs, two big golden retrievers, and one small white terrier. And after my life so far, after all the quiet, especially now that Alabama and my mother were off in France, you'd think the pandemonium would have stressed me out. But no, I liked it. I heard footsteps on the stairs. And Wink returned, wearing a green dress that seemed kind of old-fashioned. But what did I know about clothes? I usually just wore black pants and black button-downs, like Alabama. He liked to dress like Johnny Cash, or a gunslinger, minus the guns. And I figured if it was good enough for Alabama, it was good enough for me. Wink's red hair was still crazy and wild. It bounced out around her little heart-shaped face, and made her look even smaller and younger. She smiled at me, and I smiled back.
How is the gingerbread?
She asked. Great.
You met the orphans?
Yes.
Can Mim read your cards?
To my credit, I just nodded. Wink's mother spun around from the stove and ushered me into the closest chair at the long wooden kitchen table. She pulled a stack of worn tarot cards from some hidden pocket near her hip bone and held them out to me.
Pick three.
I did, and set them on the table. Wink and her mother leaned over me. Wink pointed to the first card.
The Three of Swords.
The Three of Swords is the card of loss and broken relationships, Mrs. Bell said. Her voice wasn't dreamy or mystical. It was practical and matter-of-fact, like she was talking about the weather. Things that are missing will not be found again. The Two of Swords is the card of tough choices, but the Three of Swords, you've already come to terms and made your decision. Your feet are set on a path. Whether the path will be the right one, she shrugged. Wink pointed to the next two cards. A naked man and woman looking up at an angel. A crowned king in a chariot. Two horses in front.
The chariot and the lovers.
Wink smiled. What do they mean? I asked. But Wink just shrugged and kept smiling a mysterious Mona Lisa smile. My mother had written a mystery a few years ago called Murder by Tarot. She visited several tarot readers in Seattle for research. She later told me in Alabama that some of the readers had been charlatans. Some had been keen observers of human nature, and some had been inexplicably and eerily accurate. And as far as she could tell, the true readers had no connecting factors. Some were old, some young. Some were bright-eyed and animated. Some were quiet and detached. One of them had even guessed my mother's deepest secret, a secret she'd never told anyone. When Alabama and I asked her what the secret was, she just turned away and didn't answer. Mrs. Bell, job done, lost interest in me and went back to the stove. Wink stood by my chair, not saying anything. I got up and took her hand. We walked through the kitchen, out the screen door, slam, across the yard, dogs barking happily, and headed into the deep, dark woods, toward the setting sun. A mile of pine needles crunching underfoot, darkness descending, trees tall and black, twisting forest path, cool night air. It got cold at night up in the mountains, even in summer. Wink was holding my hand and not saying a word. Poppy had said I should get to know Wink, that we should be friends. But I wasn't just obeying her orders. There was really nowhere I wanted to be more than walking side by side, step by step, with this spell girl. Her fingers moved in mine, tightened. Wink? She looked at me. What's it like? What's it like growing up on a farm with a bunch of brothers and sisters and a mom that reads tarot cards? She shrugged.
Normal.
She paused for a second.
Isn't your mom an author? What's it like to have a mother who makes up stories for a living?
I shrugged back at her. Normal. I didn't go into it all, about mom leaving with Alabama. I just didn't feel like making myself sad. And Wink was bound to guess anyway, when she didn't see my mom or brother around all summer. The creepy, mansard-roofed Roman Luck House came into view, four tall chimneys pressing at the dark sky. I stopped and caught my breath. Maybe it was because we were in the middle of the woods, near an abandoned house. Trees on all sides, and no one to hear you scream. But I got a bad feeling all of a sudden. Everything was dark. Thick, thick silence. And then I heard a laugh. And another. Muffled voices. More laughter. And then came the flames. Orange and silky, waving at the sky. A kid stepped back from the pile of wood, smiling, the way boys do whenever they manage to start a fire. I looked around. Damn it. We'd walked right into the middle of a poppy party. Poppy's parties were quiet, secret things, made up of the yellow peril and a few sycophants. The parties moved around. Sometimes they were in Green William Cemetery, or on the overgrown main street of one of the nearby abandoned gold rush towns, or by the Blue Twist River. Sometimes I was invited to her parties. Mostly not. The yellow peril were Poppy's inner circle. It was a reference to opium, because, you know, Poppy. But everyone just called them the Yellows. Two guys and two girls, and none of them half as evil or as beautiful as her. Poppy liked to lead the guys on, and would give all her attention to Thomas one week, and then Briggs the next. Just to keep them on their toes. The girls were Buttercup and Zoe. They dressed like twins, though they weren't. Always in black dresses, red lipstick, striped socks, and a twin set of cunning looks in their eyes. But Buttercup was tall and had black hair to her waist, and Zoe was tiny and had short, brown, curly hair, and both were pretty, but definitely not sisters. I'd never spoken directly to them in my whole life. They didn't matter. Not when there was Poppy. Poppy. The yellows surrounded her like rays around the sun. She wore knee-high boots and a short, swinging yellow skirt that barely covered the parts it needed to cover. She had a blue silk scarf around her slender neck, and her thighs were long and so damn creamy it made me feel sick. God, I hated her. I longed to grab Wink and run back the way we'd come. I shook it off and kept walking. The yellows all looked at me in that pitying way, like usual. But I just gave Poppy a cool nod and marched right on by, Wink at my side, like we were welcome. Like we'd been invited. The bonfire was now 6-foot flames clawing up, almost reaching the sagging roof of the Roman lock porch. But not quite. We went up to it, and the heat hit my skin in a rush. It felt good. I looked down at Wink, and she had her eyes closed, facing the warmth. I didn't look back at Poppy and the yellows. I saw 5 or 6 non-yellow kids from school. Perfect clothes and perfect shiny hair. The only time the yellow wannabes had ever noticed me was when Alabama was around. Then the girls would talk to me in a really sweet voice to show Alabama how nice they could be to his unpopular brother. Everyone was whispering instead of yelling and laughing, and there was no music playing. The yellows wouldn't stand for it. Poppy liked quiet at all her parties.